accession number 19777, Reel 1.
Bill Norman, Reel 1. Where were you born, please?
I was born at Sheffield when the 2nd Battalion, the Duke of Wellington's Regiment, was stationed there in 1920.
Did you grow up and have your schooling in Sheffield?
No. The battalion was at Hillsborough Barracks, and my father was, I think he was a corporal in the drums at the time. Very shortly after I was born, the battalion moved to Aldershot, and the soldiers were quickly taken to Ireland, to Dublin, because of the troubles there, and we were left, but not for long. They came back, and in 1922, when I was still one, we went abroad. We went to Egypt, and we were at a place called Moasca. And then we moved to Cairo, and that's where I started school.
So this was an army school?
It was an army school, yes.
What kind of education was the army providing in those days?
Not particularly good. You got very good education, but not very good schooling.
What exactly do you mean specifically?
You learnt about the world, and you learnt about things, and you really learned. You were brighter, I think, than most kids, but learning the ABC, sums and things like that, I think you was below standard.
You mean it was a moral rather than an intellectual education?
Yes, I think so, yes.
Were you happy at school in the army?
Oh, very, yes. I hated school, like we all did. You had to hate school, or the other boys would have thought you looked down upon you. But, no, very happy. We went to Singapore, and then from there we went to India. And in India we get up at, I remember times we started school at 6 o'clock and finished at 10. So with the rest of the day to play about, which we did.
How did you fare in Egypt as an English boy in Moasca?
I can hardly remember it. I know, only remember that we lived in tents. Even the married quarters were in tents. And I always remember the sand, and I remember we were always frightened of Bedouins coming and stealing us.
Was that an illogical or a rational fear?
Irrational, really, yes. And I remember the Suez Canal. We were alongside it. And I remember going to visit warships. I remember my father emptying some sand out my shoes and it fell in the canal. And the Navy fished it out for me.
Any memories of Singapore or India?
Oh, too many, I think, to record.
What type of things?
Well, most of us boys, the school we went to, there'd be about 30, ranging from those starting to those finishing. Probably at the most, there'd be 50 kids. They had probably two teachers, and they had to take the lot. They had to take all the classes. And I think that's the reason why our education suffered. At Singapore, the thing I remember was that it was hot, and we had a punkah. And a little boy, a little Malayan boy, used to pull this, and his name was Tambi, and he used to lie there pulling the punkah, and he'd get tired of pulling it. So he would tie it to his big toe, lie down and pull it with his feet. And then at playtime, he'd scoot up the coconut tree and chop coconuts down for us. And I believe Tambi got quite a good education because he didn't waste his time. He listened to everything that went on.
How? What were the relations like between English boys and Indians in general?
All right. We never had anything. We were very separate. We never had much to do with them, which was a shame. We did play them at football at Ahmednugger, but they were, well, at Ahmednugger and a place called Camp Tee, but they always beat us, simply because there were lots of them, and there were, every boy had to play in the team, as just about in our own side. So they were well ahead. Later, I got pally with boys whose parents worked for the British, and I used to run around with the Indian boys. I used to run around in bare feet too, because I didn't want to be different to them. But they never had any money, and I used to get the equivalent of sixpence a week spending money, which was a lot of money as far as they were concerned, so I could buy them sweets, and they always felt badly because they couldn't buy anything in return.
How old were you when you finished your schooling?
Well, I left India. My father got invalided out. He'd been gassed and wounded to Ypres with the 2nd Battalion. And eventually it caught up with him, and he got invalided out in 1933. And we came home to Netley, which was a military hospital, and he was discharged in 1934, and we went to Sheffield, and it was all right there. I didn't dislike it, but I always wanted to be back in India, so as soon as I was 14 I enlisted, and I had to go into the band.
Was it easy to get in?
No problem. The only thing was, I went to the 1st Battalion, which was at Aldershot, and my uncle was the orderly room quartermaster sergeant there, and his family, so it was I was quite at home there. And I was only there 2 months, and the battalion moved to Malta. I joined in November, and we went to Malta in January, but they wouldn't let me go to the 2nd Battalion in India until I was 15. When I was 15, I was back, which was like going home, really. Only now we were on the northwest frontier at a place called Nowshera. I wasn't particularly interested in the band, but I didn't want to let my father down, so I did my best to learn to play the flute. And I was chosen to go to Nella Hall in a very short time, but it never came off, simply because by the time I was due to go, the war looked like coming, and they stopped sending us.
Did you see any active service on the frontier?
Not then. We were up in the hill station when the war broke out, well, I was. And the war came, and we were told, pack up, we're going back to the battalion at Multan in the Sindh Desert. And we thought, God, we're all going to the war. We were all looking forward to it. We're nothing against the Germans. We just thought, well, war would be a great, great thing. It was just excitement. We went back to Multan, and where did we go? We went to Delhi to do ceremonial duties. And there for 2 years we did nothing but ceremonial duties, and we were very, very upset about it. Every man in the battalion, I should think, wanted to get out and get to an active regiment. They were forming a parachute regiment in India, and everyone volunteered for that, but I wasn't selected. I think I was too quiet and didn't push myself.
Which battalion was this?
The 2nd Battalion, Duke of Wellington's regiment. Then eventually we went back up to the frontier to Peshawar, and that was a lot better. We were doing frontier warfare. And although I was in the band, we were soldiers first, but we were now formed into the mortar platoon. At one time out on training, we got shut up by the local bad mashers, they call them, the bad men. They caused us 3 casualties, 1 serious. They shot at us with old Martini Henry rifles, and others. It was interesting, I loved it.
Whereabouts did the firing take place? Which part of the frontier was this?
Near Peshaw, in the field firing training area. The band was escorting the machine gunners who were going out to do their annual shooting. And while we were going along, there was a volley of shots. And we all took cover. The machine guns were off the mules in no time. And we formed up. And the drill was that they would just aim at the top, and if any opposition came, they'd open fire. And we would go up and occupy that hill in 2 parties. One lot covering, the other lot firing. When you got about 200 yards from the top, you fixed bayonets and charged over. There was nobody there. They shot at us from another hill. So we did the same and nothing happened. Nobody there. Then we did the same again. By now we were getting a bit tired. We never saw a single man. They were just laughing at us. So we packed up and went home.
Again, would this have been about?
1941. End of 1941.
Did you like it on the frontier at Peshaw?
Oh, I loved it. I loved it when we were out doing something. When we were in barracks, it just like any other Indian place, except the Indians there, now Pakistanis, they were fighting men. They had a different sort of attitude, for which we admired them. Eventually, we were out training at a place called Shamshatu. And while we were there, we suddenly got told, pack up and get back to camp as quick as you can. So we all set off marching. And trucks and lorries and officers' cars kept coming and picking up as many and relaying them back, because I was on the rear. And when we were going along, the RSM came up to me. It was a nice, kindly man. And I'd been talking to him and saying, we ought not to be here. We ought to be in Malaya fighting the Japanese, doing jungle warfare training. And he said, well, what do you think of your jungle warfare? I said, why, are we going to go somewhere? And he said, well, I think it looks like it, doesn't it? And little did I realise how true this was going to be. And when we got back to Peshaw, all sorts of equipment started to arrive. We were still equipped, more or less, as the army had left off in 1918. We didn't even have battle dress. New rifles came, replaced the US ones, and we got brain guns, we got mortars, we got ammunition for our 3-inch mortars. We'd never seen it before. We'd seen a demonstration of it, and that was all. We'd never fired a round. Although we were quite good on the drill. We got battle dress, radios, and nobody knew how to work them, but we had them. We were all put on a train, and across the burning Deccan we went down to Madras. I think we were on the train for about 6 days, and it was great fun all the way down, and we were all excited and glad to be going and getting involved in the war instead of polishing boots in Delhi, although Delhi was nice. We got on a ship called the Varsova.
In Madras?
At Madras, yes. And we didn't know where we were going, but we suspected we were going to go east. Otherwise, we would have gone to Bombay or Karachi on the West Coast. We were escorted by a ship called the Emerald and one or two other warships. Next morning we woke up and we noticed that the ship was heading east. So we thought we're going to Malaya. We started to learn the new weapons. We got the 2-inch mortar. They tried to teach us the sights, but I don't think the instructor knew much about it himself. So that was put aside. And we all fired 2 rounds out the boys' anti-tank rifle. And I fired the first shot. There's a terrible flashback and bang, and my ears rang. And the second shot I fired, I shut my eyes. But later, I became quite an expert on it. And had to give demonstrations. And I'd love to this day to fire it again, but at Bisley. We landed at Rangoon. We arrived at Rangoon to be greeted with the news that Singapore had fallen. We were quite surprised when we got there to find that the Burmese were an Asiatic race and not Indian. Our knowledge of that part of the world was so small that we didn't even realise that you couldn't get overland. You had to go around by sea. And we got off and we went to Mingladon near the airfield to an Indian police barracks where we were fed and reorganised. One or two demonstrations of the sticky tank bomb and things like that. And then one company set off quickly. And I think it was C Company. It went to defend the bridge at the Sitang River. The rest of us, we went to a place called Yit Khan and Tamapin. It was eastwards, but they feared there might be a landing across the Gulf of Martaban. And we weren't there long, and we decided we would fire our mortars. And we just fired 3 rounds, all wondering what it looked like to see the bomb land. And a dispatch rider came up, "Get back quick, as quick as you can. We're on the move again." So off we went. And the mortars were put on 1,500 weight trucks. But these, they held 150 rounds in the mortar. But the crew would overload it, so they had to march. So you got your mortar and your ammunition on one truck and your crew on their feet. Not a good idea. As we marched along, we got covered from head to foot in dust and thirst. And this became a regular thing. All the time we was in Burma, I thought of dust and thirst and not jungle as people think of it now. We weren't in that part of Burma, although we did get some jungle. A jeep came along and the MT sergeant shouted out, "Halt the column. Anyone who can drive, get out. Fort, come along over here." And what happened was the MT had arrived and there weren't enough drivers. Well, all sorts of fellas got out to drive these trucks, and some of them couldn't even drive. They got out to dodge the dust and the marching. They all ended up as drivers, though, so I don't know how they got by. And there was an awful lot of wrecked trucks on the way, too. We were entrained at Pigu. We went across the Zitang River, and we came to a place called Chakto, and that was the divisional headquarters. From there, we moved off in trucks. Then we got out and we took up a position in a village where the villagers greeted us, gave us fruit, gave us tea, and we thought, oh, this is all very nice. And they were very pleasant to us. Later on, as we approached the village, they were all run away because it was a bit... I don't think they were anti-British. I don't think they were anti-Japanese. I think they just wanted to be left alone. They were afraid of us, and I think they were afraid of if they collaborated with us, the Japanese would take it out of them. So they decided to remain neutral. Nothing happened, except in the morning there was a lot of fire came from our right flank, and we heard it that the Burmese had panicked in the night, fired a lot of ammunition, and all cleared off, a Burma rifle battalion. So it was panic fire. Then we were ordered to withdraw, and we didn't think much of this. We thought, well, we haven't seen the Japs yet. And we were marching through a lot of elephant grass. It grew in great tufts. And while we were doing this, a load of aircraft came over. I don't know how many, probably 27. And there was a big argument took place. They're Spitfires? No, not the Hurricanes. And all the fellows that had come from England, who we thought were experts, they said, oh, no, they're Hurricanes. The arguments went on, and they all got into a circle, these planes, and started diving down, and we thought, good, they're going to give the Japs hell. They weren't Hurricanes, they weren't Spitfires, they were Japanese, and they gave us hell. And I remember we were dispersed, and I heard a plane coming towards us, and then there was a noise like a very high-powered motorbike, and with your ear stuck up the exhaust. And I could hear these bullets thudding into the ground, and they came by just missing us. And my pal Jack had dropped his steel helmet, and he was one that said, what are these things for? They're useless. But there was a cloud of dust, and Jack had got his steel helmet and was trying to get underneath it. I didn't see any casualties, but there were some. We withdrew into a rubber plantation, the Boyagi rubber plantation, where all the trees were in line, and we heard planes coming again. They didn't bother us there, but we heard planes coming again. I thought, oh, here they come again. And the fellas all got behind the trees, which were very wooden to stop anything, but they got behind them. And a plane came diving down. All these trees were planted in line. And as the plane came one way, the man in front would try to get behind it for cover, and all the others behind him. And then a plane would come the other way, so the whole lot would swing round. And I hadn't got a tree. I just sat laughing there. It didn't seem to cause any casualties. The only thing I could remember about these planes, they weren't Japanese, they were RAF. And they gave us a real pasting. They shut up all our transport. It was due to lack of coordination between us and the RAF. We shouldn't have been there. We stayed the night, and then we set off marching. And I saw all our transport shut up, burning. I never saw a dead man yet. And I thought, oh, goodness me, what a mess they've made. There's our truck with all our mortars on. And it was burning. I went to see if I could rescue anything. And the thing that surprised me, there was my own mosquito net with my number stamped on it. And I thought, well, I've had you for nearly 8 years now, mosquito net, and now you're gone. So, We set off going again, and we marched. It wasn't jungle, it was sort of bits of jungle interspersed with brushland. Eventually, there was a sound of firing, and there was Colonel Owen laying out the companies to attack. And not having mortars, we were now an infantry platoon, and we all lined up and fixed our bayonets. And Colonel Owen, a very smart, dapper chap with a monocle, a very, very nice man, stood there very immaculate, and we all charged off into this jungle. A few shots came our way. When we got there, we'd had no training whatsoever in close warfare. We all got mixed up. Anyhow, I thought, well, I'll keep going. I kept moving forward and forward towards the sound of the firing, as we were supposed to do. I saw no Japanese. And eventually I thought, well, I better try and find the platoon. Well, the path went right through the middle of this jungle. I think they called it Sowell Jungle, very young. And I found some of them. We laid down, and I covered the path, which was quite wide. It was very wide, and I think it was really a fire path more than a road. And I lay there waiting for something to happen, and I saw a load of Japanese run across the road. So we all shot at them. And eventually, nothing was happening. Somebody was firing behind, and this damn gun was about a yard above us. The bullets were smacking through the trees. And my pal Jack Longdon ran round to stop them. And one of the fellows with us was hit in the head, and that was the end of him. And that was the first casualty I saw. We took his identity discs, and I set off going down. Then I met another casualty, a Gurkha officer. And he was lying there, and the Gurkhas were around him. They beckoned me to come and do something, but there was nothing much I could do. He was covered in shrapnel wounds, and he told me he had a sword wound in his lower side. And the sword wound. It occurred to me, since it being a rifleman, he probably meant a bayonet wound. Anyhow, I said, well, and how are you then, Mr. Patterson? And he was most surprised that I knew his name, because I saw it written in his hat, which was lying. And the Gurkhas said that they would look after him, and I saw him being evacuated on a mule later. Then I moved forward, entirely on my own. We weren't organised, and I met Major Robinson. And we decided that we would go forward. And we met fellas firing, and they said, well, the Japs are there, and you could see them lying behind trees. I don't know, I think I fired 7 rounds in their direction. They would probably be 100 yards away at the very most. Someone said, Abrahamson is hit. Where is he? He's down there. So a pal of mine, Armitage, and I, we went down to go and find him. But